Commodity Week is made possible with support from AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists, on the web at AgriGold.com. And with support from ADM, using corn and oil seeds to create biofuels, agriculture's answer to diminishing fossil fuels. ADM, resourceful by nature. Commodity Week is a production of listener-supported public radio at the University of Illinois. To learn more, visit us online at will.uiuc.edu.
Corn makes a new contract high, and chatter from Chicago turns to a market teetering on the edge. We'll discuss that and more today on Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Later in this half hour, we'll talk with Jerry Golke of Strategic Marketing Services out of Rockford, Illinois. Our panelists today are Mike Zuzolo of Risk Management Commodities out of Lafayette, Indiana, Brian Stark of the Andersons in Champaign, Illinois, and Clayton Pope of Clayton Pope Commodities in Champaign, Illinois. Let's open today's discussion with this question. Mike Zuzolo, Friday afternoon during the closing market report, you told us conversations in Chicago had begun to hint at a market running out of steam. I'd like you to explore a bit those feelings in Chicago and then for you, Clayton and Brian, to expound on the chatter you've been hearing from the floor. And we'll start with you, Mike.
Well, it's certainly strained. The fund positions are strained with the corn, you know, up over 285,000 futures and options long. The market sentiment seems strained because of volume, and the implied volatility on these options is almost 40%. The market technical seems strained with a lot of support trend lines tested on Friday, Todd. And the commercials are very strained right now. They're in a position of margining up shorts on paper and at the same time bidding up for cash, not getting it because of harvest delays. All the while, the fundamentals keep pointing towards smaller supplies and demand for exports. Really haven't pulled back that much. So that's where the strain and the edginess comes from this market. Is everyone seems strained right now, and the producer's sitting there saying, I want more. And we say that's fine to hold out for higher prices, but do it in known risk strategies at these prices.
And Clayton Pope, what are you hearing out of Chicago?
Well, an awful lot of people scratching their heads, I think. You know, like Mike said, some of the normal barometers of an extended market or a market that's overdone or whatever are all kind of through the roof right now, whether it's RSI or you know, just number of days higher and that kind of thing. I guess all you can say is it's just sort of an unprecedented money game right now. I think it's at the point where, kind of like the wheat market a couple weeks ago, I think at this point it sort of has less and less to do with fundamentals and more to do with the fact that the shorts are absolutely stampeding for cover, and there's some more buying, but really the fund buying in the last few days seems to be rather moderate. I think there's just a real lack of willing and able sellers at the moment.
And Brian Stark, you may hear more out of Maumee, Ohio, than you do out of Chicago, but what's the chatter like?
Well, I think the chatter, Todd, right now is that it's been pretty interesting watching the funds the last few days change from a straight buying pattern, investing in the nearby contracts, to the last couple of days bull spreading between July 7 and D7, which where we know most of the bullish fundamentals lie within the December 7 futures contract. I just think that the market is really overtired from the buying spree. I don't think anyone has a good feel for how high it's going to go. That's the universal question we get from the farmer. Where is the end in sight? And I think we don't know. But it looks like the market is ready to take a break and kind of calm itself down for a while.
Speaking of how high it's going to go this week, the December contract made a new contract high at $3.34. Did that in the overnight trade earlier in the week and then turned around Friday afternoon or Friday and went to $3.34 as well. Had a low for the week on the trade at $3.07. Settled 19¾ higher from last Friday's settlement price at $3.32.5. December 07 corn, $3.38¼. They were up 9½ cents. December oats, by the way, at $2.40½, up 16¼ for the week. So in the corn pit, it's an outside up week. The 2004 high is 341½, went to 334 this week. Support down maybe at 307. Mike Zuzolo, will it make a run at 341½?
Well, if we come in with harvest progress numbers on Monday, not better than 4 or 5%, yeah, I think we probably will, Todd, that the wheat market showed a really nice move as a whole this week. The bottom line for us right now is you can't fight this trend until you take some technical support out. So, yes, the next high is a available, especially if you have a sluggish harvest pace on Monday afternoon's numbers.
You said wheat, but you meant to say the corn market made a nice move this week, right?
Well, no, I meant that the wheat was unexpectedly went down to $5, and we thought that, okay, this technically means that you're going to go ahead and call this thing a double top, and a lot of people in Chicago midweek really felt strongly about that, and you also saw the rain come in the new crop, and the new crop reacted to that by going lower. So you had rain coming in the southern plains, front end gave way, but they didn't want to take the wheat lower on the close on Friday. They wanted to keep it at a relatively decent price level, and we found that to be very surprisingly friendly given how negative some of the commentary was in the midweek time period. So we think we thought we had lost wheat as our friend in corn, but at the end of the week we can't say that.
Since you broached the subject, we'll stay with wheat for the moment, at least in the numbers. And they finished the December contract a 5.41 high, a low at $4.99. They managed to gain 3.5 cents on the week at 5.08.5 for the December contract. That was the settlement price. And July on Friday afternoon at 4.66.5, the harvest month up 0.5 cent in the wheat pit. So let's go back to the corn, Brian Stark, very quickly. Many say sell and sell and sell. On the cash side, one, is this the right thing to do? Two, if so, when do you replace? If you replace, and how?
I think the biggest thing we've been looking at, something that we haven't maybe delved in with the producer from a grain elevator standpoint, is the use of options. Clayton and Mike probably use those more with their customers than we do, but I think given the current market dynamics, I think it's good to sell into the rallies, but to look at replacing those sales with call strategies. And the most popular one we've been using lately, because the in-the-money calls are so expensive, and even the out-of-monies, you have to go so far out of range to get a cheaper premium, is to look at a vertical call spread and locking in a range, buying an in the money, selling out of the money to help offset some of that cost to the producer. Those are something that I think is going to be key, a min-max contract down the road, something that a lot of producers are going to want to look at.
Of the producers that the Anderson serves and the grain you expect to bring in a harvest season for the corn, how much of it have you purchased already this year outright?
I would say at least 60%. Most people have taken advantage of the prices to sell across the scale when we got above $3. I think the biggest chunk of what we haven't contracted are producers that bring everything into the elevator. We've encouraged them to save at least a quarter of their crop for higher prices in the spring. I think even if you wanted to try and get them to convince them to price now, you'd have a hard time doing it because it seems their horns continue to grow and point higher every day.
Clayton, would you say 60% is enough sold, or do they need to go ahead and make more sales?
Well, I've been advising to be about two-thirds sold. So, yeah, I guess being right about the same camp there. And I don't have any argument, you know, in the current scenario, if a person wants to buy back and in effect be long, you know, more than a third of their crop at this point, I just think that they're better served using a strategy that has limited risk, whereas holding cash corn would, of course, be unlimited risk.
And Mike, we talked about this on Friday afternoon just a bit. You've got a strategy that says sell and replace today.
Yeah, that on partial sales, that's exactly right. And we ran some numbers on an option program that we used, Todd. And if you had a 360 March call on Friday's close, theoretically, if you ran up to around 395 in March futures, that 50-cent rally, you'd be able to get around 35 cents of that gain by the option. By the same token, if you went down to around 310 in March futures, that 35-cent loss in the futures would equate to about a 10-cent option loss. So that's really what we're kind of trying to say here is, yes, you're capping out some of your potential gain, but at these price levels, that's a very good idea to do, because you're also capping out, you know, obviously theoretically with the bought call, you're capping out a lot of your potential losses as well.
I want to let you talk a little bit more about wheat. You discussed the potential of a double top that didn't occur in the middle of the week after it dropped down below $5, and then it managed to rally back with wheat finishing at 5.08.5, up 3.5 for the week. Australia has a drought, of course, and there are some estimates now pushing that crop down to 6 million metric tons, canola and barley affected there as well. Is the wheat market topping, do you think?
We can't say that yet. I mean, it may be, but, you know, what we looked at this week was you pretty much beat Australia. Australia is a beat horse at this point as far as running that up on the supply side, but you also have been looking for demand news, and you got quite a bit of it between Egypt and Iraq, and then you also have the new issue out there, the Central Plains in China, with them having actually reportedly some prevented plantings in wheat because their dryness is so severe. So you've got a new supply side issue. Demand hasn't walked away that much, so you can't really call a top if you look at the fundamentals.
I'm going to put this harness on you. You're the one of our analysts that has long said that wheat has to lead this market for the corn up. Probably rightfully so, I suppose. You started talking about that. I don't remember how long ago.
When I had hair.
Yeah, oh. Oh, man, if you haven't seen him, he's bald like a cue ball, my friend. That was a long time ago. Okay, so the question is, if it falls, will corn fall with it?
It's going to have to a degree because that you go back to that substitution and the acreage issues. The producer has to realize in the back of his head that if you see wheat acres not get planted in China this year, then probably you're going to see corn or bean acres get planted. So at some point in time, the supply does come up. And what we've always said is the wheat supply tends to come up the fastest on high prices. The wheat demand usually goes down the fastest on high prices, and that's why it is our leader at this stage. So, yes, if we saw a break in wheat and we saw a double top in wheat, we probably would push on the 07 sales a little bit more aggressively. Again, that goes back to why we're buying the early 07 calls, the March and the May 07 calls. We want to use those calls for two reasons, both get the 06 re-ownership on the books and also have something there to be able to have comfort on market some 07 crop.
Clayton, let's switch gears and talk a little bit about soybeans. Did you know that, in fact, January soybeans made new contract highs this week along with the corn? Yep, at 655. Will our friends in South America respond, do you think? And if so, how does this potentially impact the corn-soy ratio in the coming months?
I think there's probably a marginal increase in acreage down there, but it's getting pretty late, really, for too many acres that had not been planned on being in production to all of a sudden hop into production. Longer term, of course, I think it would have a bigger and bigger effect. But as far as this year, I'd be surprised. I mean, some people are talking about a 6 to 10% decline in acreage down there, and this would probably minimize that a little bit. But I would certainly still think we're going to get some kind of acreage decline. The ratio... I think this is just going to be a year where the ratio stays way out of whack compared to historical norms. In other words, I think we're something like 1.9 to 1 right now, versus a normal 2.5 to 1. I don't see that going anywhere much above 2.0 to 1. I think corn is going to continue to be the leader here and outpace beans. And by the same token, I think at this point, even though wheat was kind of the catalyst that jump-started this whole thing 5 or 6 weeks ago, I think – at this point, corn has taken the leadership position, and will starting about 3 or 4 weeks ago, will continue to outpace wheat up or down. I think corn is going to become dearer relative to wheat.
Brian Stark, I have two questions for you. One of them will be on corn. We'll come back to that in a moment. I do want to follow up with the planting season in South America. It runs October, November, December. Is this move that the beans have made enough to buy acres in a place where they're not able to borrow money?
Well, I agree with Clayton. I don't think it's going to be a big effect. What we've been hearing out of South America lately has been originally here about 2 to 3 weeks ago, a 10% cut in acreage. Now it's more along the lines of maybe 5 to 7%. But I think, like he said, it's a little too late in the game for them in planting season to reconsider, especially when they're having trouble with their credit lines. And the later they get started planting beans, the bigger the issue of rust becomes, more applications, more expenses. I think that's another factor that plays into their minds. So, sure, I think the higher prices probably bought a few acres that weren't going to be planted, but it's not going to be big enough that that we would hope, I guess they would hope for, to get more acres back into the fold.
How wide is your basis on corn on Friday?
Right now we're 8 under the D's, Todd, and it's funny you bring that up. Basis is extremely hot this fall, to almost reverse to what we're used to seeing through the past few harvests. It's just, I guess, a function of two things, really. One, farmers have looked towards storage on the farm more. They've rented storage. They've built new storage the past year. A lot of grain hasn't moved as much that we're accustomed to seeing. The other reason reason is the sluggishness. I mean, you look at the crop progress report, 37% this past Monday in Indiana, 18% in Ohio. I mean, those guys to the east are just struggling to get their crop out right now. And because of that, the end user, the processor, doesn't have any choice but to bid up for corn. So the producer right now is the best of both worlds. He's got the board rallying in his favor, and he's got a very firm basis.
And would 8-under be what? Is that narrower than usual?
Narrow and usual. I would say on average, if you go across our past 10 to 15 years, maybe 15 to 20 under the Dease would be a normal basis for fall. Some years, obviously, wider, like last year with Katrina, but this is extremely narrow. And we're talking in the amounts of this is has a better chance of appreciating. The Southeast rail values have just exploded, and Central Illinois processor use in Decatur are paying overs close to double digits. So I don't see the basis coming down anytime soon until grain starts to move more, and they may not occur till January, February, or March.
And I want to follow up one more question on that. Would you think that an 8-cent premium for the transportation cost is added to the normal 20 under, so that would be more like 28 under? I'm trying to get an idea of how narrow this is compared to what farmers would really be thinking about. So if you're at 20 under, and then over the last 10 years, throwing out last year, would it be more like 28 this year?
Probably. I tend to agree with that. It's probably more of a premium added into it.
And so then the question, Mike and Clayton, is do they need to make sales when cash basis is this tight?
Well, it certainly makes it that much more enticing. And yeah, I think you've got to reward the bid that's out there. And then I'd be tempted to replace sales with you know, like Brian said earlier, a vertical call spread. It is probably a good tool to use in this environment, because to just buy an outright call, I mean, the volatility has got those things so doggone expensive right now. And I'd also be tempted to probably go out on the time horizon a little bit, because these I mean, on paper, eventually, I think as far as the fundamentals go, the real battle is going to be out there in the 07 crop year, I would think.
Mike, your answer is yes, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
The okay. More, I thought so.
Yeah, the more inverted you go, and the less the market is paying you to store as a producer, especially if it's unsold bushels.
In just about 2 minutes, we'll talk with Jerry Golke of Strategic Marketing Services.
I'm Steve Hilberg with the Midwestern Regional Climate Center, located at the Illinois State Water Survey in Champaign. There was not much change in the overall weather pattern this last full week in October. It was cool, and occasional rainy weather continued to harass harvest activities in Illinois. Temperatures this week across Illinois were much below normal, ranging from 12 degrees below normal in northeastern Illinois to 16 degrees below normal in far western Illinois. Normally this week in October, we experience highs in the upper 50s north to the upper 60s south, and lows in the 30s to the mid to upper 40s. It was not only a chilly week, but the week got off to a winter-like start with cold, blustery weather and some snow flurries in northern Illinois. Precipitation this week was heaviest in the northern and far western portions of the state, areas which have been somewhat dry. 1/2 to 3/4 of an inch of rain fell across northern Illinois with the cold front that brought the blast of cold air to start the week. A potent storm system that brought heavy snow to Colorado spread a large shield of rain across Illinois late in the week, with the most substantial amounts in western and southwestern Illinois. The weather pattern here in the Midwest will undergo a change after this weekend. Temperatures next week will be milder and generally above normal. There will be a slight chance of showers on Halloween as a cold front swings through the state, but it appears, for the most part, the week will be dry across most of Illinois. For the Midwestern Regional Climate Center in Champaign, I'm Steve Hilberg.
And I'm Todd Gleason. You're listening to Commodity Week on WILL AM 580. Our panelists today, Brian Stark of the Andersons in Champaign, Clayton Pope of Clayton Pope Commodities here in Champaign, and Mike Zuzalo of Risk Management Commodities out of Lafayette, Indiana. Our guest is Jerry Golke of Strategic Marketing Services. The main focus of Jerry's company is to manage the risk associated with producing crops or raising livestock. The objective, according to the website at jerrygolke.com, is to enhance not only the financial aspects of production agriculture through strategic recommendations, involving hedging and timely cash sales, but to educate clients on the working of price discovery. Jerry also writes a column for Top Producer Magazine. Thanks for being with us today, Jerry.
Thank you for having me. It was interesting to listen to the panel.
It was a good conversation up front. You know, in November's issue of Top Producer, you say the market's creating a perfect storm of demand outstripping supply worldwide, and you call it a trifecta for the big three crops, corn, soybeans, and wheat. Why?
I think it's kind of obvious. We've seen what happened in the wheat, something that none of us really anticipated earlier on in the spring, perhaps. But with what's happened with Australia coming up short with wheat, that puts a real tight supply on feed wheat. And if you remember in 1995, that was kind of an issue with South Korea. They finally had to buy corn from us because China couldn't supply them with the feed wheat, and of course the rest was history. We ended up with a short crop of wheat and corn, and China bought us out then. Well, now it's ethanol that's taking China's place for now, and it's just created a real interesting situation for farmers, really wherever they're at in the United States, I think. And I still farm in North Dakota as well, and we've sold some wheat for next year, spring wheat. We started to plant it. We're going to plant it next year, and near that $5 cash level out of the field, and that competes pretty well with soybeans and corn. And it's one of those things now where just about anything I plant anywhere in the United States is going to make me money. It's not a matter of, well, I'm going to lose $30 in beans and make $30 in corn. Maybe it's $75 in corn and $50 in beans and $50 in wheat. And, you know, that's a little different than looking at one crop and that's not going to make money. So it's interesting. I think we've just begun to educate the end user and buyer out there that there's a bidding war coming for acres out next spring.
On that subject, you mentioned some unbelievable prices in that Top Producer article. $6 or $7 corn, theoretically. And then you go on to talk about 1995 and those who did not hold out for the 525 corn. How much of your crop do you have unpriced at this point for 2006?
For 2006, we're about 40% cash price that we sold, and we're actually long calls now. I agree with the panel. We bought the $3.40 March calls and sold the $4 ones for probably 17 cents, something in there, to replace some of the cash sales recently, and have been buying, selectively buying, futures or buying the calls prior to a crop report, and then for cheap money, 3 cents, 4 cents, and seeing them go up, from like in that 250 area to 275, and exercise them in the these futures, and made some money back on some pretty poor cash sales we made that looked pretty good back last spring, but from that time forward we're basically flat now on what's unpriced with long some calls. We bought some bean calls as well, January bean calls outright, some $7 calls. If this thing gets legs, then I think they'll catch on. And, of course, the wheat, we're 100% sold for 07 wheat, fighting the battle with buying some of the D's against it a few times. We were not on the wrong side of this thing. And this was an education for me because I manage about 1 million bushels of wheat for clients. And you could just easily see where if you'd listened to conventional wisdom, and been selling the wheat in D's and buying the July, thinking that spread was going to widen out, I could have lost $600,000 in a day. And so it reestablished in my mind what I've been trying to say for years on Top Producer, is that, and I noticed some of the panel said, well, there's resistance up here and there's something up here. We're kind of looking back to predict the future, and I think that's dangerous because we've not been here before. We're kind of writing new textbooks now to say what happens when you have a sustainable demand, not hogs that you're going to go out and shoot and create less demand, but you've got ethanol that's in place, you've got biodiesel that's coming on strong in Asia and Europe that's going to eat up a lot of oil seeds. So you've kind of got a train wreck coming first here in corn, and oil seeds will be next, and now what will happen with wheat if somebody, China or Australia, gets another bad crop. So these are great times to be alive in agriculture, and I think one of the best times in my lifetime for opportunities.
Jerry, I just was curious on what your feeling is on what you've been hearing as far as yields. It seems like here in through the Central Corn Belt, we talk to various people throughout the Corn Belt as far as yields, and the corn yields have been good, but maybe below expectations. And there's a general feeling, you know, with the USDA lowering their yield here past in October's report that they may do it again in November. We've been talking here today about a market being tired. Do you see another bushel and a half cut off the yield in November, and will that continue to drive the market higher in corn?
Yeah, I do. I think we're going to take Ohio down some, and Illinois maybe a bushel. But our survey with our clients a while back suggested maybe a 151.8 in that area, and of course then that will likely bring us down further in carryover, and even more importantly, as some of you mentioned, that in 07, you know, we could bring that carryover down, even though we were going to plant maybe 4.5 or 5 million acres more of corn. We'd have to have a pretty good crop just to keep that carryover above 600 million bushels, and I think the pipeline supply now has to be at least that level. So you could look at this market and say, fundamentally, corn is not worth what we're paying for it now, but I think we've learned through this last 2 or 3 months that the market is not looking at today, it's looking ahead, and what if, you know, we don't bring these acres out of production? You know, what if corn is $7, I mean, beans are $7 next spring, and now it makes a difficult decision for me. And we see this thing, you know, these prices a lot higher. Will we grow enough corn, even at a better yield? And that's what I think the market is looking at further out and saying, I've got to do something here up front. And I think there's a good chance that we invert this market in July, kind of like we did in 1995. That's kind of the mentality of a lot of the traders and index funds is that, you know, if we get this price high enough now, maybe we'll draw in enough acres. And the key that we hadn't talked about yet, and I don't hear a lot of talk about it, is this February average price for corn. That, you know what that does to our guarantee on our corn. If we're in this 335 area for diesel 7, and that's almost $100 an acre more guaranteed bushels if on a revenue basis than what we had last year, I'm a little concerned that we're going to plant for that insurance, and beans better be pretty high in order for me not to plant a lot of corn next year. And so we got a lot of things to cover between now and the March 30th crop report, but I think we want to watch that February average price. I don't know how many people on the Board of Trade understand that. I think very few, but we as farmers understand that. And gosh, it'd be a slam dunk to make money planting anything, it seems like, especially corn.
Boy, what a wild scenario. Like you said, I guess it's a great time to be in agriculture. But as you said in the very beginning, Jerry, you know, we're looking at one of those rare times where any of the three major crops, corn, beans, or wheat, are you know, look very profitable right now. If you couple that with the fact that it seems like corn demand is fairly inelastic, I mean, if you look at a chart of usage over the last 30 years, it's just straight up. You know, what's right. going to give here?
Short answer.
Well, I think first, you know, I'm sure the livestock guy is going to have a problem, but I'm wondering whether we can't get the price of corn high enough to where we take some grain out of exports. Exports look awful good now, but you know what happened in 95? Pretty soon we started using bark off the trees in order to be able to feed animals. If you can warn the user far enough in ahead, he can make plans for a problem down the road, and I think we see exports maybe backing off a little. Plus, when you get grains this high, just about every country in the world has got extra bushels they want to sell, and I remember back in 95, we had people selling wheat and corn and that would have probably not sold it otherwise.
And Jerry, because, we have to go.
You know, the temptation was too good, but I think it's exports and the livestock is going to have some problem down the road. They're uncovered, you know. They're basically short-bought yet.
Jerry, we appreciate you being with us.
Yep, thank you again.
Jerry Golke is with Strategic Marketing Services out of Rockford, Illinois. Gentlemen, you've got 5 seconds for a final word. Brian Stark.
I would just say continue to have a safe harvest. We'll be wrapping up here in East Central Illinois very soon, and to make good sales here into the rallies as we move forward.
Clayton Pope.
Like Jerry said, we're certainly in uncharted territory here. It's probably a good time to look at putting some definable risk alternative option plays on.
And Mike Zuzalo.
We're starting our 07 hedges and beans next week.
Thanks much, gentlemen. That's Commodity Week. I'm Todd Gleason.
Commodity Week is made possible with support from AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists, on the web at AgriGold.com. And with support from ADM, using corn and oil seeds to create biofuels, agriculture's answer to diminishing fossil fuels. ADM, resourceful by nature. Commodity Week is a production of listener-supported public radio at the University of Illinois. To learn more, visit us online at will.uiuc.edu.